Trainer Talks and Tales acknowledges the traditional owners and custodians of the land in which we're recording this podcast, the Turrbal and Yugara people of Meanjin. We pay our respects to elders past and present and extend our respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
Trainer Talks and Tales love having an array of guests with a variety of opinions. However, the views of the individuals do not necessarily reflect the perspectives of the host facilities. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Trainer Talks and Tales. You are joined by just me, Daisy. We are so grateful for you guys being super patient whilst we've had a little bit of a break during the middle of the year. Both Tess and I have had so much going on, and we were super excited to catch up with you all about everything that's happened, because we've had a lot of fun things happen, a lot of places that we've visited, new things that we've learned. And the reason that you are just stuck with me for now is because, if you didn't know, Tess had her beautiful baby girl, Indy. So she's spending some really quality time with Indy and Chris, her husband, and just spending some time getting used to being a family of three. So Tess is welcome to join back whenever she feels up to it and whenever she has some time. But I am super excited and so motivated to bring you all so much new content, new episodes, new conversations. We've got lots planned for the remaining of this year, so we are excited. And like I mentioned, we will absolutely do a bit of a catch-up episode once Tess is back, and we can chat all about the things we've been doing over the last month or so and what to expect going forward for us over the next few months. But to start us back this brand new season, we are lucky enough to be joined by Kyle. Now, Kyle actually chatted to us all the way from Canada. He's got a ton of experience working in zookeeping, but he also owns and manages a really successful company called Wild Enrichment. Now, this episode, we chat a lot about enrichment. We talk a lot about behavioral husbandry and how we can positively use that to impact the welfare of our animals that we look after. So I really enjoy chatting to Kyle, so we really hope that you guys do too. Kyle, thank you so much for joining Tess and I on Trainer Talks and Tales today. We are so excited to chat to you all about your career, animal welfare, and of course your amazing company, Wild Enrichment.
Thank you so much for having me. It's awesome to be a guest as well on a podcast. It's great to be working with fellow podcasters, so thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely, we love chatting to other podcasters for sure. But before we get into the nitty and gritty, we do love to start Training Talks and Tales with a fast five, so I'm just going to throw five really fast questions at you. Does that sound good?
Sounds great.
Perfect. Okay, question number one, summer or winter?
Winter.
Favorite species?
Bears, probably, grizzly bears.
Favorite snow activity?
Snowboarding.
Bucket list destination?
Oh, well, Australia, since we were just talking about it.
Yeah. And finally, what is your favorite primate species?
Orangutans.
Nice, well done, great job. Kyle, we obviously want to talk to you about so many different things, but we'd love to maybe start about chatting about your career and what sort of led you to be where you are now.
Yeah, for sure. So I've talked to a lot of keepers about, like being a keeper and working in this industry, and a lot of people were sort of lucky enough maybe to have that goal in mind. They wanted to be a keeper since they were kids or whatever. I was not really like that. I grew up on a horse farm, and I worked with horses from a pretty young age. I went to school for conservation biology. I sort of wanted to get into the wildlife biology field. That was sort of my goal in my early 20s. And I was lucky enough to get a job at a zoo during my time at university, and sort of worked there in the summers. And I found it, immensely rewarding and a really great career. I worked at a couple different zoos across Canada to sort of get to where I am now. I think, especially one of the things that brought me to specifically focusing on, animal welfare and enrichment and these sorts of topics that I've really you know, I don't want to say become known for, that's a little weird, but like, you know, like that's sort of been my, the focus, the lens that I've been really looking through my career at. And I think one of the biggest things for me was the, when I worked with horses, seeing what zoos were capable of doing with things like positive reinforcement training and things like enrichment, like really blew my mind. You know, the horse industry, especially then and even now, is still sort of positive reinforcement training is not necessarily the tool that a lot of horse trainers are reaching for. Still now, even with all of the research that we have. So seeing, you know, I think it was a camel voluntarily walk on a trailer for the first time, it blew my mind when I got to a zoo, because I had been risking life and limb getting horses into trailers that didn't want to go into them for a lot of my young adult life. So it was, and I want to preface that, like, we did treat our horses very well. It was just, you know, like positive reinforcement training was not, it was a horse rescue. So, you know, they were all in sorts of various states of distrust of humans a lot of the time. So that really blew my mind. And seeing, you know, on top of that, how animals really reacted to enrichment. And that was a sort of thing as well that I really didn't have a lot of experience with. And I've been, you know, I thought I'd been really like on a high level caring for animals for a really long time, and seeing these things that we can add to an animal's environment to, you know, enhance their lives and improve their welfare was like a huge, you know, eye opener to me. And that's really when I started Wild Enrichment, when I was at one of the zoos I worked at. It really originally was starting just putting the enrichment that I was building up online, and it's sort of evolved into a lot more than that today. So yeah, it's a sort of a linear path, but it's really been focused particularly around animal welfare, enrichment, behavioral husbandry, all those kind of things.
Yeah, that's so exciting to hear. And I really love how you touched on sort of relaying a lot of the stuff that we're doing in zoos with slightly more domesticated animals, because Tess and I have touched on in the past how sometimes we can forget that we have our own pets at home, and, you know, they're so capable of learning the same concepts and capabilities that those animals are in zoos. We just have to put in the time and share those similar principles. So it's great to hear that you recognize that with the horses as well that you worked with.
Yeah, and it's a weird one, because it's like, you know, the domestic animals are actually, I mean, theoretically the ones that you probably have a little bit more time with. But, yeah, you know, when you look at dog training, when you look at horse training, all those kind of things, it's zoo training is miles ahead of those, especially when it comes to positive reinforcement. I mean, dog training is gotten a lot better, but there's still a lot of, like, you know, balanced trainers and all these kind of things floating around that really just doesn't happen that often in zoos. So it's an interesting sort of contrast with, you know, you wouldn't expect the higher level training to be with animals that we're really less familiar with as a species. So it's really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Now, you briefly mentioned your company, Wild Enrichment. Can you delve a little bit more into that, what it focuses on, and how you came about the company?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been almost 6 years now, which is crazy. Time flies.
Wow.
And as I said, it sort of started with just posting enrichment that I was building online. Again, I was lucky enough to grow up on a farm. I was, you know, relatively handy, and I was building a lot of things. It's sort of the niche that I really felt, you know, as a lot of people, when you start your career and whatever the career may be, you sort of find your focus and the thing that sort of sets you apart from people you're working with and sort of where you fit in with teams and building enrichment and focusing on this, you know, animal welfare as a whole was really where I felt most sort of valuable to a lot of the teams that I was working with throughout my career so far. And that really made me focus on, you know, enrichment and posting the stuff I was building. I had a couple different like online businesses at the time, and I was sort of familiar with putting stuff out, and then I just started taking pictures of enrichment and posting sort of build guides. You can still see them on the website. And it was, it, you know, gained quite a bit of traction, and it was really great to be able to put something out online and affect animals that I don't work with, you know, in a positive way. And that's what I really felt, where I really felt the value and the sort of drive to keep going for 6 years. It's you know, when you work with animals in a zoo, you are the stewards of their welfare, the animals that you are sort of control of. But when you post stuff online and like what you guys are doing with the podcast, like you can affect change, you know, it way outside of that sort of your sphere of influence when it comes to, you know, the facility you work at. So I really sort of latched onto that, and I sort of kept growing Wild Enrichment. It's definitely not done growing by any means, and I've sort of kept adding things like I do a lot of sort of pro bono consulting with a lot of sanctuaries and smaller zoos all over the world, which has been tremendously rewarding. And recently, you know, started my own podcast. And yeah, it's sort of I would classify it now as more of like an animal welfare education company. That's really what I've strived to do is, you know, benefit animal welfare. And typically that comes from educating the people that are working with the animals. So yeah, it's been a really exciting and really rewarding part of my career so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And 6 years, that's incredible that you've really kind of built it from the ground. And it sounds like it very organically grew from something that you were genuinely so passionate about. And I feel like that's genuinely when you see the most success with those businesses and the companies that you've been able to do. So you touch a little bit on sort of behavioral husbandry a lot with what you do as your company. How do you think that animal welfare can be improved through doing behavioral husbandry?
Yeah, so I think, when it comes to thinking about behavioral husbandry in respect to animal welfare, a lot of the animal welfare issues that I've worked with facilities on are almost always management issues. And by management, I mean like the team that is working with those animals. There's typically some sort of way that we're working with that animal, way that the team is functioning, fill in the blank, that when you change that, the welfare of the animal improves. And I find, behavioral husbandry is really when you're a keeper, when you're looking after these animals, it's the easiest tool to sort of reach for when it comes to a direct impact you can have on animal welfare. These are things that you're adding to an animal's life to ultimately improve their welfare. And, focusing on that, I think there's a lot of people, and especially a lot of consultants, that focus on, you know, animal welfare as a whole. And then you sort of have to do that to a certain extent, but I found, behavioral husbandry in particular, a very like underutilized, tool for a lot of facilities. And it's something that like, it's one of those things that you can always keep improving on, and always there's so much, fantastic information coming from other facilities and other zoos, other keepers that, and other podcasts like and these media outlets like what we're doing right now. And yeah, behavioral husbandry has always been really something I'm super passionate of, and when you do it right, it's so rewarding to see the impact you can have on animal welfare. Because when it comes to things like enrichment, it's you're really trying to add something to an animal's environment, the static environment that they might be living in, and bring out something that might not have been there before that will impact their welfare. So I've always found that tremendously interesting and very rewarding. So that's really what I've focused Wild Enrichment on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you explained that really nicely. Do you mind maybe just doing like a really brief overview of what we're talking about when we say behavioral husbandry, just in case there is anyone that might not be completely understanding what we're talking about?
Yeah, so typically when we're talking about behavioral husbandry, we're talking about two sort of camps that are not mutually exclusive in any way. We're talking about enrichment and we're talking about training. Enrichments, we're trying to add things to a static environment in order to, bring out a natural behavior in an animal. For the most part, when we're speaking broadly, training, we're conditioning an animal to perform a behavior that, will also eventually probably improve their welfare. So, that's sort of what we're talking about. My company focuses largely on the enrichment side of things. I'm by no means an expert trainer, as I'm sure you guys are, but it's enrichment is typically what I've found a knack for, and habitat design and all those kind of things. So that's speaking very generally, that's what we're talking about.
No, I think that you summarized that really well. So obviously you're aiming to provide really effective enrichment. Can you tell us why you believe we should provide enrichment and what impact it does have?
Yeah, so as I've hinted at a couple times, is the animals in the wilds, they are faced with a complex and changing environment that provides them with challenge, that provides them with stress, that provides them with all these sort of feelings and opportunities to perform behaviors that they have evolved to perform, and sort of really allows them to occupy a niche in their environments that they're very specialized in, and they've evolved for. And a lot of the environments that we have these animals when they're in human care, these habitats they're in, just by design, they are not quite as interactive, complex. They're more towards static environments, and there are environments being developed now that are hoping to provide more inputs to the animal to make them less static. But it's a very, very hard thing to do. A lot of these animals have behaviors and have tendencies that are very hard to provide them with. I've worked with caribou a long time. They like to migrate thousands and thousands of kilometers across a continent every single year. So how do you provide them with that? So there's a lot of these examples where an environment that you design, it's very hard to keep it complex enough and keep it changing enough to really provide the best as far as welfare standards to an animal. So in order to allow these environments to be a little bit more complex and to sort of bring out these natural behaviors that these animals are evolved to perform, we use enrichments. And enrichments is, a lot of the time when we're talking about enrichment, we're talking about a device, but it doesn't always have to be thought of that way. I tend to talk a lot about your sort of enrichment experiences. So we're really focusing on what is the animal experiencing in this habitat at a given time. It's not really specifically about a device. We are trying to, if you are feeding a big cat their part of a carcass in a bowl, the experience for that cat is walking up to a bowl and eating part of a carcass. The part of eating the carcass might be slightly enriching, but the full experience for them, we're really trying to mimic something like hunting. And when you're talking about hunting, the experience for that animal, that looks like finding the scent of that animal, chasing that animal, navigating the forest. You might be stalking that animal, you might be chasing that animal for a long period of time, you might be fighting with that animal, you might be there's so many different things that go into that. You might be competing with conspecifics for that animal that you've that you've just killed. So that's what the experience of hunting looks like for, a wild tiger, for example. So what does the experience look like when we feed them in zoos? Mm-hmm. So really trying to get as close as we can to an experience and make it as enriching and fulfilling for an animal is really the goal when I'm talking about enrichment.
I absolutely love how you said, and I took a lot from that point that you just made about it's not just sort of the item that we're putting in, it's the whole experience. We have recently at my facility changed from, you know, kind of doing that to looking at more behavioral goals that we want to see from enrichment. So whether the goal of the day is to see foraging, or we want to see grooming, or we want to see, you know, net positive interaction with objects or with each other. And that has really helped in the way of understanding what behavior we want to see from it. But I think even more so that we can look more into the experience and what we want the animal to be showing us during that enrichment, rather than just, you know, pushing a ball around the habitat, wherever, whatever species that might be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I find, you know, when we are not focusing on something like specific items, we are focusing on the larger experience. If you group a lot of the enrichment items that you're giving an animal by the experience that they provide the animal, you find that you might have, you know, 50 enrichment items and a whole shed full of enrichment, all sorts of stuff happening in there, but the shed might just be, they're just a bunch of different things that provide the same experience for the animal. And that's a real trap that I find a lot of people fall into, is especially with, I think things like boomer balls are absolutely fantastic, but that is that a lot of the time is this cop-out sort of check mark on an enrichment tracking form. You know, it's like, oh, we gave a ball to this animal and it's in the exhibit. And it's like, that's the experience of that ball. You know, what's that providing the animal? So you also get a lot of, if you have something that rolls on the ground and when the animal rolls it, it sort of drops out food, that's this sort of foraging experience that I find countless enrichment items provide. So when you're switching out, you know, if you have a jug that has some holes in it, and then when the animal mm-hmm. rolls it around, it drops out some food, or a ball that has some holes in it and it drops out some food. Are those two different experiences, or are those essentially one experience that you're just varying slightly? And how impactful is that going to be for animal welfare? So I find that's one of the huge benefits of really focusing on that experience and less about the items.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we, like in particular last year at the conference we went to, one of the conferences in Australia, they did a fantastic workshop with Tim Sullivan about enrichment. And he really made it so present that enrichment isn't an option. It's like a mandatory part of those animals' days. It's just as important as feeding, just as important as, you know, giving them access to water and to each other for social, you know, it's completely mandatory in making their day better. With that though, how do we, I think we'd be silly to not acknowledge that sometimes enrichment needs to be reinforcing for us as well. To see an animal, you know, participate in it is great. But if, you know, you want to do it again and again, and if you're struggling with animals that are not participating, not getting much out of it, it's, you lose a bit of that motivation as a trainer too. So how can we best sort of set up our enrichment to succeed for the species and for us too?
Yeah. I think the most important thing is to define like what success looks like for a lot of these enrichments, experiences that you're providing an animal, you know, that like with something like a reptile, if you're giving enrichment to, a Burmese python, what does success look like for that animal? Because if you're expecting it to, you know, get up and do a very slow, long backflip or something, then you're going to be disappointed, and that's going to frustrate you because it's not going to happen. So I think, actually really sitting down and discussing and having very clear, you know, similar with when you're doing some sort of shaping plan, building approximations for training, you have a very clear sort of endpoint, a very clear, this is what the behavior should look like. You should do the same with the enrichment experiences, because if you're waiting for something and you're just not really sure what that thing is, but you want it to be sort of exciting and tremendously reinforcing for you just inherently, then unless you work with, you know, young big cats or something like that, you're not going to get that every time. So defining success and having clear goals and understanding, you know, what adjustments to make if those goals don't happen, is very, very important. And that's really what's going to set an enrichment program up for success in the long term, especially when we're talking about, you know, making it rewarding for the keepers.
Yeah, I think sometimes we can forget to look at, yeah, the success of like what the succession looks like. I think that's such a good point, because I don't think very often, to be completely honest, I go in to an enrichment session with that in mind of what I want to see to be successful. So I think that's something that we really have to pay attention to and be more aware of to indicate to us, is this enriching to the animal? Are we getting what we want out of this device or whatever it is that we've done?
Well, and evaluating that success, you know, not just the first time, but repeatedly over time, and then making adjustments to make sure that, you know, success is still something that you're hitting time and time again. And there's, you know, lots of strategies to try to do that. But yeah, it's very important to be evaluating that.
Yeah, it's very absolutely. Easy just to see the animal interact with it and be like, whoa, interaction, like what a success. But yeah, it needs to be a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So Daisy mentioned it before, and I completely agree. I think that in terms of providing enrichment for our animals, the narrative is changing a little bit. We need to make it a part of our day. It's as essential as other things like providing food and shelter and that kind of thing. And it's very easy for us to fall into the trap of saying that time is a big constraint and we don't have the opportunity to provide it. And I think that that's very easy to say. And obviously, if we could provide it daily, keepers would. It's not like they're trying to cut corners by saying that they don't have this time. But do you have any tips for this being a constraint for keepers and how they can provide enrichment to animals when this is an issue for them?
Yeah, and I think there's tons of, you know, easy sort of low-hanging fruit when it comes to enrichment designs. There's you know, hundreds of Pinterest boards full of all sorts of things that you can make very easily. I think it's a fundamental switch with, you know, our priorities. You know, as we were just saying, with you know, looking at the actual behavior that you're trying to elicit with an enrichment item as opposed to the actual item, that's a fundamental switch. I think that it's a fundamental switch when we're looking at you know, time when it relates to enrichment, you know, because there's a lot of you know, care teams that say enrichment is a priority, but how often do they come in the morning and they say, well, these are all the things I need to get done, and then I'm going to work on this enrichment project, you know, and the things like cleaning, all of these things are priorities. I'm not saying one's better than the other, but you know, there's all these tasks that you have to do, and then you're going to get to the building enrichment or the providing a really novel experience, doing all these things that are going to be impactful for an animal's welfare. You know, how often do keeper teams come in and say, I'm going to do that thing first, and then I'm going to see how much cleaning I can get done in the afternoon? Like that almost never happens. And if that's a true priority where you're saying, hey, you know, enrichment is just as important as things like cleaning, as things like, you know, these, you know, sort of general husbandry activities, you know, then why doesn't that happen? You know, so I think fundamentally looking at what you're spending your time on in your day and really starting from scratch, because I think, you know, the role of a keeper has changed tremendously over the last decades. And I think what typically happens is you have this routine, this you know, thing that you're doing every day to take care of these animals, you know, they're called all sorts of different things, but the routine that you're doing, all of these things have been just added to an additional routine over the decades. Whereas now I think is the time to start from scratch, you know, like get your priorities right. And then just say, hey, if I had no knowledge of the stuff of the routine that I used to do, what would it look like? How would I actually care for these animals now? Like, what are the priorities? What do I actually need to clean? You know, what are these corners that I think I'm cutting? Because, you know, I've cleaned things to make people happy. I've cleaned things to, because I was worried about making a team member mad. I'm like, oh, I know they like the shavings this way, so I'm going to make sure I do this. I've cleaned things because I like pressure washing things. Who doesn't like doing that? But like, if you are, everything you do in your day as a keeper, if, you know, if you're asking yourself, why are we doing this? And the answer isn't to improve animal welfare, or because it's a standard for whatever your accrediting body is, then the answer better be a really good one, you know? And if it's not, then why are you doing it?
I love
so
that.
I think fundamentally looking at how you're spending your time is the most important thing that you can be doing in your day. And that is what's going to, you know, you can faff about with easy enrichments to build, but at the end of the day, like, what you're spending your time on is what's going to impact animal welfare the most.
Yeah, I honestly don't think you could have answered that better. I feel like you made some really, really good points. Being that you are a bit of an enrichment guru, do you want to maybe share like how you set up your day as a keeper at your job, like to prioritize that enrichment, just in case anyone might need some sort of ideas?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of really useful tools that I've seen from other facilities. I don't think there's a sort of perfect way to do it. I've seen some really cool, like I know Oakland Zoo has done a really interesting, they've done a number of talks at ABMA on like a behavior matrix, those kind of things where I'm not going to be able to explain it properly on this. I definitely encourage people to go look it up and try to find some information on it. But, you know, really fundamentally making time for the enrichment is how I've set up my day. And typically, you know, throughout my career, I've been working on teams where like, that's not necessarily the priority. And that's tough. And I recognize a lot of people that are listening, that's going to be the case for them as well. You know, like you're a member of a small team of, you know, 8 or 10 people or 6 people. And it's, there's a couple people that might not be super supportive of these programs. And that's a tough place to be in. If you are lucky enough to be on a team that is fully supportive of, you know, these sort of modern animal welfare practices, then, you know, as I just said, like you need to sit down and figure out like what, you know, how often every single thing that you do in your day, you need to get to the point where you feel like you're 100% optimized. It's, and I get, I'm not trying to like burn people out or do any of this stuff, but you need to really sit down. This is what's worked for me, is like really sit down and look at these routines and how you're spending your time. Every like few minutes like really makes a difference. If you look at, you know, if everybody, if you're on a team of 8 and everybody's, you know, wasting, I'm doing air quotes even though this is a podcast, they're wasting, you know, 10-15 minutes a day on something like pressure washing a wall that doesn't need to be pressure washed every single day, it's going to have no impact on the animal. It's not really related to your accreditation standards. If everybody on your team's doing that, that's a tremendous amount of time. It's hours that's being wasted every single day. And I think figuring out the times that I felt like I had the most impact on animal welfare when I was, you know, a part of a direct care team is when we cut all that stuff out and direct it 100% toward animal welfare. And it doesn't necessarily mean enrichments or training, or, you know, it could be animal welfare assessments. It could be more monitoring on some of these animals, going through camera footage. It could be really sitting down and looking at group dynamics and, you know, doing deep dives on actually evaluating enrichment. But, you know, when I've taken the time that I'm not doing something productive when it comes to animal welfare and shifted that to focusing on animal welfare, that's really when I've found I've made a tremendous impact on, you know, animal welfare. So that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's a place for intense pressure washer cleaning, But at the end of the day, our goal is to provide the best welfare that we can to these animals. And that is such a great point. I would love to sort of take that to my team as well and sort of think about the 10 minutes here and 10 minutes there that we could all put together and see if we could provide an additional enrichment or provide better welfare at some elements of that. With wild enrichment in your company, how do you generally teach setting tools up for sort of goal setting when it comes to enrichment? Because I think goal setting can be really important to preparation is key for a lot of things.
No, absolutely. I think what that actually looks like is going to vary tremendously by facility. I think, some facilities are, down for some really cool looking spreadsheets that have some all sorts of graphs on it and are tracking all sorts of stuff. And that's awesome. I love a good spreadsheet myself, but at the same time, like a lot of facilities aren't necessarily there. There's a lot of facilities that are really small where there's, one person doing five people's jobs kind of thing. Like they are the plumber, they're the zookeeper, they're the registrar, they're the, all these kind of things. So it varies tremendously, but I think fundamentally, like when it comes to goal setting, it's sitting down as a team, all the people that are going to be, decision makers when it comes to this goal and actually discussing what the goal is and putting that on some sort of paper or computer or whatever you're using in order to really actually have like a tangible thing that you are looking at as a team repeatedly. And I think it's staying on track. It's the same with, when it comes to training, when you have a great training team that all has exactly the same criteria, exactly the same, final approximation in mind, when like, it's insane the stuff that you can teach an animal to do when you have that sort of clear communication. It's the same with enrichment. It's that sort of communication and that constant, and not just doing it once, it's, hey, this is where we're at. Like, where do we go to like reach that goal? And fundamentally, like that's what it's, comes down to on every team. I like, having sort of, computer-based enrichment tracking on something like Excel, that you can really look at, you can make dashboards for each quarter and have those sort of prompts for your quarterly conversations with like, hey, what do we want this animal's day to look like? And what does it actually look like? And how can we sort of, what behaviors are missing here? What behaviors do we need to increase? What behaviors, why are we giving, olfactory enrichment, 50 times and this enrichment not so many times, and asking those questions. So I think having the sort of frameworks there as a team to have those discussions is really what makes goal setting important and meaningful over the long term.
Yeah, definitely. We've said this multiple times on our podcast. It's not about ticking a box. It's about actually succeeding and looking at the outcomes, and I think that's really important. And the fact that you said that you're writing down or collecting that data, it does keep you accountable too. You're not just, woohoo, I've done it. It's reviewing what your outcomes were. Now, you have a hugely successful podcast talking all about enrichment, behavior, and general animal welfare, which we're actually very excited to be guests on. What are some of the things that you've learned from your guests being on your podcast?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's just been a fantastic way in general of just having, these are the conversations that I'm currently having with so many people that I've always wanted to have. And the podcast has really given me like a sort of venue to, like sending a cold email is awkward, but like being like, hey, like you're not the only person I've had on this podcast, it, like gives you the sort of, leverage to actually talk to some people that you might not ever really carve out, time for. And I think, it's fascinating. I've really tried to keep it broad, and I've tried to keep my guests people that I actually want to have a discussion with. I haven't really paid attention to, I have an audience and I like my audience, but I think my audience just, they want me to have discussions with people that I want to have discussions with. And I don't have discussions with only zookeepers or only people in zoos. I have discussions with, you know, I had a discussion with Esther Matrai in you know, Hong Kong, a dolphin researcher that does like cognitive enrichment research on dolphins. I like to keep it broad, and I've tried to, there's so many different conversations that I've had that I feel like the podcast has allowed me to have in a more organic way, as opposed to like waiting to run into someone at a conference or something like that. I've learned a tremendous amount, and I've learned that it's really hard to podcast as well. I think
us too.
asking questions and being engaged in a conversation is like one of the hardest skills. Because I feel like you have to listen, and you guys are doing this now and you're doing a great job of it. But when you're listening and also trying to pick out questions, and not, you never want to get to a point where like they stop talking and you have just nothing in the barrel. You know what I mean?
I love that you appreciate this too, because I sometimes
it's very hard. And I feel like that has benefited me like in real life as well, like just being better at conversations and being a little bit better at listening and you know, asking good questions. I think that's been one of the biggest things that I've learned from podcasting. It's really hard to do, and it's been awesome to do it.
Yeah, I think you answered that really well, and I feel like Tess and I can probably relate to a couple of the things that you mentioned there. It's extremely rewarding, but it can definitely be hard work too. But I actually completely agree with the point about being listening, and I feel like I've taken that on a little bit more in my day-to-day as well, just being an active listener. And someone told me once about the ability to just sort of let someone, when they think they've finished talking, you know, just allow them the opportunity to continue if they want, because then they end up saying more things and feel more comfortable with you, and without feeling like we're constantly, I feel sometimes we want to talk, we all want to talk, you know, I love the sound of my voice too. So I want to jump in and you miss those really important moments that people want to share. So I think that's a really good thing to remember. But speaking of, you know, epic questions, we do have a couple of questions from our listeners to wrap up the podcast. So question number one was, what is a species that you would love to consult with in the future?
I'd love to work, do some more like great ape work with, you know, anything from gorillas, orangutans, chimps. I think I've spent a lot of my career working with like larger carnivores and hoofstock, and I've had a lot of diversity there, but I've never worked directly with any sort of great ape. So I definitely think that would be it looks like a hell of a challenge. It's very hard to do, but I think as far as enrichment goes and training goes, and, you know, behavioral husbandry in general, like those are some of the animals that you have, the sky's the limit, really. So it would be really, really cool to work a little bit more. And I've been able to here and there with some institutions. So it's I would definitely like to do more great ape work.
Yeah, that would be so rewarding. Holy moly.
Yeah.
Now, our final question is, what is something you want our listeners to take away from this chat?
Yeah, I would definitely like them to take away the when we were talking about prioritizing your day, because I think, you know, we're often sweating the small stuff by talking. I get asked, if I post a Q&A on Instagram, it's like, what's the easiest 5-minute enrichment that you can think of? And like, that's great. And some facilities are at the point where like, that is actually the solution, but like often you're fighting the symptoms of, you know, your institution or your team or whatever is saying that animal welfare and enrichment and behavioral husbandry is the priority. But if that's not the priority of how you're spending your day, then that's not necessarily the priority for the animals. So really looking at your priorities and, you know, adjusting them accordingly is definitely the most important takeaway that I think, you know, everybody can, even the people that have gone through that exercise can continuously do. I think it's really, really important to make sure your priorities are in check when it comes to animal welfare.
Yeah, definitely. And I think all of those points are something that I've taken away from this chat. So I really hope that the listeners have been able to take that away too. Kyle, thank you so much for your time this evening for you, this morning for us, and working across all of our time zones. We are incredibly grateful for your time and all of your experience and knowledge. I feel like it's going to be hugely beneficial for our listeners. So thank you so much again.
Yeah, thank thank you both. It was fantastic to be on, and I'm excited to, you know, have you guys on a guest on my show. So, you know, thank you, and looking forward to talking to you again soon.
Yeah. Thanks again, Kyle. Well, that was a fantastic episode to start us back here at the podcast. Like I mentioned, I loved having a chat with Kyle, and both Tess and I really hope that you enjoyed that conversation too. If you haven't checked it out yet, Tess and I were lucky enough to go on to his podcast as well. So you can listen to that over at Wild in Richmond. That was released a couple of weeks ago. So it was a great opportunity to have him on our podcast and also to chat to him on his podcast. That is us signing off for now. We will be back in your ears next week with another episode. See ya.